Yeah, it was a real travesty for Northwestern to do this. The students made a good faith agreement and really solid principles that the university has just rejected and kind of on Thanksgiving weekend shown how the United States government is known for breaking agreements with groups. But these two stories are actually quite, quite connected. I was saying that there are ways that we could be giving more resources to help deal with HIV public health in the United States and around the world. Scientists at Northwestern University and other universities and U.S. pharmaceutical companies are making lots of money that that is dependent upon this kind of work that's being done. And so Northwestern is throwing away tens of millions of dollars. The money that was given for the LGBT chair that I hold has basically been wasted because I haven't been allowed to teach for 2 years. And it's a real tragedy to see how people around the world, LGBTQ people of color, usually have been doing really, really important work on behalf of U.S. universities, on behalf of the United States government. This isn't just aid. This is, payment for the ways that people are doing research and volunteering their bodies to be tested for medications. Meanwhile, back in the United States, a university like Northwestern is just throwing away tens of millions of dollars to a fascist regime.
We want to thank you, Stephen Thrasher, for joining us, author of The Viral Underclass, The Human Toll When Inequality and Disease Collide. We'll link to your Intercept piece, Trump Gutted AIDS Healthcare at the Worst Possible Time. A belated happy birthday to Dina Guzder. On Thursday, December 4th, I'll be at the Bay Street Theater in Sag Harbor doing the Q&A after Steal This Story, Please. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Join KBOO Community Radio for a KBOO Fights Back campaign. We are raising $75,000 by December 31st to keep community media strong. Stop by the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, for an in-person meet and greet on Saturday, December 6th, or Sunday, December 7th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Meet hosts, producers, board members, and other KBOO members. Enjoy light refreshments, tour the station, and make your year-end gift in person. Learn more at kboo.fm/in-person2025. Thank you for supporting KBOO.
Is autism an epidemic? Or is it a superpower? Are you a little bit on the spectrum? Or are you hashtag actually autistic? I'm Carrie Stewart Lingle, host of NeuroEmergent. Join me from 11 a.m. to noon on the fourth Wednesday of every month to explore neurodiversity in the Pacific Northwest and beyond, right here on KBOO Community Radio.
Don't know what to get your loved ones this season? Check out kboo.fm/merch to snag some KBOO swag to support community media in style. While you're shopping for gifts, you can make donations to help support KBOO's $75,000 goal for our KBOO Fights Back campaign, now through December 31st.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, Portland Mayor Keith Wilson nominates a permanent city administrator.
Portland Public School Board will vote on a controversial construction contract.
And TriMet cuts go into effect.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, December 2, 2025. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Eric Leuschner.
And I'm Dave Johnson. Portland City Council could be meeting its first permanent city manager very soon. Mayor Keith Wilson nominated Raymond Lee for the position. Lee was the city manager of Greeley, Colorado, a city about a fifth the size of Portland. Since around this time last year, longtime bureaucrat Michael Jordan has served as interim city administrator. Under the new form of government, the city administrator oversees all of the city's bureaucracy and is charged with executing the city council policies under the oversight of the mayor. Lee said in a statement, quote, "Throughout my career, I have been guided by a deep commitment to public service, values-based leadership, and creating environments where people and communities can succeed." He continued, quote, "Stepping into this moment for Portland is both a responsibility and a privilege, and I welcome the opportunity to partner with the mayor and council as we continue building a strong foundation for this new form of government," end quote. Officials say over 100 people from across the country applied for this job. Portland City Council will vote on whether to appoint Lee at their meeting next Wednesday on December 10th. If they vote him in, he'll take over the position at the end of the month.
Portland Public School Board meets tonight at 6 o'clock, and members will vote on a multi-billion dollar contract with a construction firm set to complete the renovations of 3 area high schools. It's a 5-year contract with the Texas-based company Presidio, worth $61 million. In the bidding process for this contract, though, the second-place finisher, Turner & Townsend Heary, is challenging the decision. Under public contracting rules, they could seek judicial review of the contract. They were the firm helping to construct and manage renovations at Roosevelt, Grant, Lincoln, Benson, Franklin, and McDaniel high schools. PPS is under a lot of pressure to deliver on these 3 final high school modernization projects, which have been delayed and hit by cost overruns. The last 3 to get repairs are Cleveland, Jefferson, and Ida B. Wells. Over the last week, the vote on Presidio's contract got more contentious. School board member Virginia Lafort posted to her Facebook page a number of concerns about the contracting process and asked if the vote should be pushed back so people could weigh in. Former school board member and current Multnomah County Commissioner Julia Brim Edwards echoed that concern, saying the contract was, quote, "a heist of unprecedented size by a firm with a minuscule track record to justify the size of the contract," end quote. The school board president and other members have defended the decision-making process. The Portland Public School Board meets tonight at 6 p.m.
An Illinois student's father has been detained by ICE since September, despite being in the process of obtaining his green card. She shares how her family has been left to shoulder new responsibilities and emotional strain. She says their situation reflects the experiences of many longtime hardworking immigrants separated from their families during detention. The Portland Immigrant Rights Coalition received reports of 373 ICE detentions in Oregon in November. Judith Ruiz Branch has more on the story.
A Chicago family affected by federal immigration operations is hoping for a resolution that can reunite them this holiday season. A student at DePaul University, Caitlin, who prefers her last name not be shared, says her father has been in a detention facility in Michigan since Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents detained him in September while he was on his way to work. Although her family maintains daily communication with him and tries to visit on weekends, she says the lengthy process has weighed on her and her family. Caitlin, who is a college senior, says she's fallen behind at school, and she and her family have had to fill the gap left by her father's absence.
We had to navigate the process of how it's like without having a father at home. It came with more responsibilities, paying bills, and how to pay credit cards for my dad. I mentally was not focused.
Caitlin's father is from Belize, and she says he was in the process of obtaining his green card when he was detained. His next court date is scheduled for this week, and she says the family is hoping for some good news that will move them closer to seeing him come home soon. Caitlin says her father has been in the U.S. for more than 20 years and does have a criminal history, including some DUI convictions. But she says the last one was about 10 years ago, and he's been sober since 2016, attending weekly AA meetings.
So I think that has impacted his case a little bit, and we have been trying to like fight his case on how he's been better and how he's a much better person, father, brother, but it's a lot harder than we thought.
Caitlin says her family was fortunate that her brother was there when her father got detained. Otherwise, they wouldn't know what happened to him. She says her father has met a lot of people in the detention facility who've been in the U.S. for many years with similar stories.
People just like him, like hardworking people, just trying to make a better living for them and their family. I just hope everyone can understand. And I just hope that this all can be over and families can be together again. And everything can be better for all of us.
For Illinois News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch.
Cuts to Oregon's largest transit agency went into effect this week after state lawmakers funded a transportation bill that did not support transit as expected. TriMet will make a 10% service cut over the next 2 years, and those cuts started on Monday. The frequency of 5 bus lines in the Portland metro area are being cut back after 7 p.m. FX2 on Division Street, 35 McAdam Greeley, 77 Broadway Halsey, 52 Farmington 185th, and 81 Kane 257th are all going to be impacted. TriMet is also considering increasing fares to make up for the costs. Money has been tight since the COVID pandemic, which saw transit ridership drop big time. In the metro area, it hasn't fully recovered yet. TriMet made these cuts with input from 5,000 riders who took their survey, ranking which cuts they should make first. Another survey is expected in January to help define where they'll make cuts into the next year. TriMet isn't the only regional transit agency making big cuts. In Medford, the Rogue Valley Transportation District laid off 80 staff members and cut 60% of its services.
A nursing shortage is causing economic ripples through the California healthcare system. Studies show about 20,000 vacant nursing positions in the state's hospitals, a number that is expected to more than triple by 2033. Mark Richardson reports.
California is seeing a staffing crisis in nursing that is upending workplaces and threatening patient care and safety. Nurses say their workloads have grown out of control, according to KFF Health News, and they're facing immense pressure to discharge patients and turn beds, especially in financially struggling hospitals. Catherine Phillips with the nonprofit California Healthcare Foundation says the situation is getting worse.
In 2025, statewide, we now have a 5.2% shortage. We're about 19,000, almost 20,000 nurses short of what we need to meet our population demand in the state of California.
Phillips says regional shortages, particularly in the Central Valley and rural north, are expected to grow. Researchers predict that unless lawmakers in the healthcare industry take dramatic step, the shortfall could more than triple by 2033. Studies show the gap between the supply of nurses and the demand is complicated by inadequate career paths and high turnover in a labor-intensive industry. Nurses and their unions also claim the problem is driven primarily by what they see as a management-induced staffing crisis and poor working conditions. Phillips says patients are caught in the middle.
It's a vicious cycle, and it affects everyone in the healthcare system. We've seen that hospitals close. That means there's fewer employment opportunities for nurses, so it's harder to recruit them into those regions. And those who are left have to do more with less.
Phillips says new legislation is aimed at strengthening staffing laws and supporting nurses, but challenges remain in the areas of cost of living, education, and retention. In addition, Medicaid cuts and new eligibility rules caused 3.4 million Californians to lose their health insurance coverage, risking $30 billion in annual funding and further straining the healthcare system. This story was produced with original reporting from Angela Hart for KFF Health News. For California News Service, I'm Mark Richardson.
As Trump administration faces charges of possibly illegal military orders, Senator Mark Kelly says he won't be silenced. The White House blames the Biden administration for National Guardsmen being shot, and Indiana lawmaker unveils new congressional maps in heated session. With those stories and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
For most of Donald Trump's career, bullying people has worked out for him, but not now, because I won't let it happen. The American people won't let it happen.
Arizona Senator Mark Kelly is doubling down on warning troops against following illegal orders as the administration is under increased scrutiny for what could be war crimes. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth wants Kelly investigated and possibly court-martialed for saying soldiers should disregard unlawful instructions. But Hegseth himself is facing intense questions over whether he gave illegal orders in strikes on Venezuelan boats accused of smuggling drugs. A bipartisan group in Congress wants an investigation of an attack on survivors after one boat was struck, arguing it could be a war crime and against U.S. law. The White House says Hegseth did give the order to the admiral, who then directed the second strike, but both men were within their legal authority. Meanwhile, the White House is blaming the Biden administration for letting the suspected shooter of two National Guard members into the country. Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt says Ramanullah Lakhanwal wasn't vetted after the withdrawal from Afghanistan. She says President Donald Trump's immigration policies and the latest crackdowns will, quote, preserve the integrity and character of the national identity.
The tragedy we just witnessed the day before Thanksgiving is a reminder that untold thousands of terrorists, gang members, and criminals were invited into our country and remain here to this very day. The border is now secure, thanks to President Trump.
Lakhanwal was repeatedly vetted while working for the CIA during the war and actually had his stay in the U.S. finally approved by the current administration. And close to three-quarters of people held in ICE detention now have no criminal record. Healthcare costs are rising, and a new report finds states like Pennsylvania are seeing record increases in the number of kids without insurance. Becky Ludwig with Pennsylvania Partnerships for Children says it's not clear why, but it is happening.
Hispanic children have seen a pretty large increase in the number of uninsured, as well as children living in families with lower resources or lower incomes. There's a widening gap we're seeing in terms of children who have insurance based off their family income.
In a month, expanded ACA premium subsidies expire. Trump proposed extending them, but then backed away under GOP criticism. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries says they intend to hold Republicans to their promise of voting on the issue this month, although it's not clear when.
Republicans have done nothing over the last several months to address the healthcare crisis they have created, and they continue to refuse to take yes for an answer.
Indiana's House of Representatives unveiled a proposed congressional map eliminating both districts held by Democrats. Initially, the state refused to join the redistricting arms race initiated at Trump's urging. Democratic State Representative Matt Pierce says the current special session violates the rule requiring majority and minority parties to agree on what's to be considered before one is called. He says in this case, the minority leader wasn't even consulted.
What we have here is the majority party has decided this political task of saving the president and the Republicans in the U.S. Congress is the essential business to be conducted that justifies breaking these rules and coming in early.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You are listening to an end of your membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your membership on or by you can renew your membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after the news for KBOO News in Depth. At 6, it's Transpositive PDX. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of about 40 degrees. Tomorrow, look for clouds with a high of about 47. Today in history, in 2020, cannabis is removed from the list of the most dangerous drugs of the International Drug Control Treaty by the United Nations Commission on Narcotics Drugs. The quote of the day is from French pointillist painter Georges Seurat. Born this day in 1859, he said, quote, "Art is harmony. Harmony is the analogy of opposites, the analogy of similarities of tone, of tint, of line taking account of a dominant and under the influence of the lighting, in combinations that are gay, calm, or sad." Thank you.
Master carvers in Alaska have restored the house posts outside the Totem Heritage Center. With that story and more, it's Antonio Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. If you visited Southeast Alaska's Totem Heritage Center this fall, you may have noticed something missing from one of its outside walls. That's because three carved posts, which were made by students and master carvers, were temporarily removed for restoration work. As KRBD's Hunter Morrison reports, the house posts were reinstalled in November.
Inside a workshop at Ketchikan's National Guard Armory, Tlingit Master Carver Tommy Joseph is hard at work. He's slowly shaving a block of wood into the shape of a dorsal fin with an oddly shaped knife.
And the tool that you're using, does that have a particular name or...?
Charlie.
He then trades Charlie, the reverse bent knife, for a tool that looks like a sickle, but works like a hammer. Large wood shavings fall to the floor. The new dorsal fin will later be affixed to the Heritage Center's killer whale house post, which is like a small totem pole. It's a small piece of a larger project to restore three of the museum's house posts. Historically, house posts are carved to honor events, clans, or tribes. Joseph says they were cracked on the outside due to decades of wear.
It's time to take care of them, treat them a bit, and clean them, then treat them, and hopefully give them lots and lots of life in the future here.
The three posts were carved in the mid-1980s as part of the Heritage Center's Native Art Studies program. Students worked for 6 months alongside Indigenous master carvers to create five posts for the museum's exterior. But like totem poles, house posts traditionally aren't restored. They're meant to last the lifespan of a person, about 80 years, then returned to the earth for decomposition. But these house posts have only been around for about half of that time, and museum staff say they still have life in them.
They tell the story of the Totem Heritage Center in a way that is not just about the totem poles inside of it.
That's museum director Samantha Forsco, who says the house posts document the museum's history and relationships between students and instructors.
This is one of a handful of totem restoration projects Joseph has been a part of in Southeast Alaska. He says each one is different from the last. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Hunter Morrison.
It's not every day you get to see an eagle, let alone two together, alive and up close. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, it's something visitors of a Phoenix, Arizona nonprofit recently did while blessing these animals during a Native American wildlife celebration.
Robert Mesto with Liberty Wildlife is Pasquayaki and honors Eagle Cisco and Anna Sazi with a song.
And they're revered for their strength, their intelligence, and even their healing and protective powers.
Things the Phoenix nonprofit is helping guests tap into one November Sunday morning.
Pinch some sacred tobacco, take it to the eagle, and say their prayer. And oftentimes the eagles will flap their wings. To feel the wind of the eagle is like the ultimate experience.
That lasted for an hour. Augie Molina, who is Pasquayaki, spiritually prepared people bringing offerings to the birds.
When you smudge, it's going to take as long as it's going to take.
For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The holiday season can intensify depression and anxiety in children and teens, which often show up as irritability rather than sadness, says one mental health specialist. In a webinar, she urged families to watch for early signs and connect kids with support. Crystal Blair reports from Kansas City.
As the holiday season ramps up, it's a time when stress, loneliness, and family pressures often collide. Missouri mental health providers say young people are especially vulnerable. National surveys show nearly one in three U.S. teens reports persistent feelings of sadness, which are often exacerbated by the holidays. In a Kansas City-based Metro Council webinar, psychologist Megan Kanya tells Missouri providers that these symptoms in kids don't always look like sadness. She says they sometimes show up as conflict.
All of a sudden, they go from being a really easygoing kid to all of a sudden they are arguing, they're talking back, they're refusing to do schoolwork. There may be a lot of school avoidance or refusal. They may have stopped doing chores. They may be having trouble getting out of bed.
Mental health professionals point out that holiday routines, disrupted schedules, and higher expectations can make those behaviors more noticeable. But they also offer parents a chance to intervene early. Clinicians note they often see seasonal spikes in anxiety and depression between Thanksgiving and New Year's Day. And with anxiety rising nationwide, fueled for kids by academic pressures, social media, and overall uncertainty, Kanya reminds Missouri families that anxiety itself is not the enemy.
Our goal in treatment and even our goal in assessing it is never to call anxiety bad or negative. Anxiety is meant to keep us safe. There are still things that within our anxiety system or within that warning system that are effective and help motivate us.
She encourages family to help kids build what she calls distress tolerance, learning to stay grounded when emotions run high. And for anyone struggling this season, help is available 24/7 through the National Suicide and Crisis Lifeline by calling or texting 988. For the Missouri News Service, I'm Crystal Blair.
A public health instructor says symptoms of chest pain and shortness of breath led her on a years-long search for a diagnosis and proper treatment. 38-year-old Katie Wagner says because she kept pushing, she found the answers that may have saved her life. Laura Hatch has more.
A University of Montana public health instructor credits persistence and self-advocacy for her health and possibly her survival. 38-year-old Katie Wagner says she started feeling some disturbing symptoms when she was 29, starting her long journey to figure out what was wrong. She says cardiologists dismissed her shortness of breath and chest pain even when they started getting worse.
The self-advocacy piece really comes into play that I kept pushing for answers knowing something was wrong, right? And knowing that it was more than anxiety, that unfortunately, I think women in particular tend to hear that a lot. And I do have anxiety around not being able to breathe.
After years of ER visits and seeing specialists, she says she finally found a cardiologist who put her on the right path. That doctor sent her to the University of Washington for testing that wasn't available in Montana. Doctors there discovered a potentially fatal heart condition, significant blood flow obstruction in the largest coronary artery in her heart. She had open heart surgery in June and awoke free of the chest pain that had affected her quality of life for so long. Wagner says her condition, a myocardial bridge where the coronary artery tunnels through muscle and gets squeezed with every heartbeat, is usually benign. Hers was so serious that she was only getting half the normal blood flow through that artery. As a mom of two kids, ages 6 and 8, she says she came out of surgery feeling overwhelmingly grateful.
Gratitude not just for the surgery, but for the life that this has already given me, and I'm just over 4 months post-op. I feel better than I have in a decade.
Wagner says she can dance with her kids now and feels like she has a second chance at life. With a PhD in health sciences and public health, Wagner knew her symptoms were serious and she had to keep pushing for the care she needed. That's her message to others. Don't stop and don't give up hope.
Trust your gut. You know when something's off, and I honestly don't know that I would be here if I didn't trust my gut.
I'm Laura Hatch, Big Sky Connection.
A Hollywood team gathers unused meals from TV and movie sets to share with food pantries, shelters, and low-income apartments. The effort helps to feed local folks who struggle to afford food. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections.
Mark.
Hollywood film sets are bustling with people, from actors and makeup artists to camera operators and directors, and they all need to be fed.
It's really like going kind of to a wedding every day for lunch.
That's Hillary Cohen. She and Samantha Liu have both worked as assistant directors on film and TV sets, and they've seen how much food can go to waste, sometimes because too much was made, other times because scheduling changes left fewer people on set than expected. So to keep food from getting trashed, they created the nonprofit Everyday Action. Their team collects unused meals from sets and brings them to pantries, shelters, low-income apartments, and other places where they're needed.
And we're saving anywhere from, I'd say, 500 meals to 2,000 meals a week.
So the effort is helping to feed people who may struggle to afford food. And it helps the climate, too, because it keeps so much food from rotting in landfills and emitting climate-warming methane. And it reduces how much food overall has to be produced, processed, and trucked, all of which creates carbon pollution. So there are multiple benefits to putting Hollywood's leftovers to good use. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to an end-of-the-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dave Johnson and Hannah Francis. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Crystal Blair, Antonia Gonzalez, Edwin J. Vieira, Laura Hatch, Judith Ruiz Branch, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner.
And I'm Dave Johnson. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.